Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. Western psychology, when I was studying, was of the belief in giving the practice of the importance of processing your feelings, letting your feelings out. Oh, you're angry. Talk about it. Get it out. You know, we had screaming into pillows, punching bags, literally. These were techniques. You've got anger. You need to get that anger out. Here's a punching bag. And depending on your therapist, literally, there would be, you'd draw pictures of who you were angry at and paste them on the punching bag. If it was pain and tears, you'd cry into pillows. These are not fringe things. This is relatively mainstream therapy for a long time. It's now starting to shift. And the problem with that is that, and I speak this as someone who was on the receiving end of it, as well as on the studying to become one of the givers of it, end of it, is that's what you learn. You learn to scream, that's what you start to do. You learn to punch, that's what you start to do. Not actually, but you start to have the instinct. It actually worked in a backfiring sort of way. There was no sense of getting out emotions and therefore them being out of you. The emotions don't actually sit in us like a piece of bad food. I mean, if you get food poisoning, you eat something that's bad, you vomit, it feels horrible, but once it's up, you feel much better. Rehydrate yourself and you're done. But our emotions are not like that. You can't actually throw up anger or pain or sadness or loss. You can't shout it out. You can't hit it out. You can't throw it up. And so all of those concepts ended up creating actually patterns in our mind of thinking about them. And even if we weren't actually in therapy, it's such a cultural way of being that this is what, I mean, I remember we used to go out for tea or coffee or dinner or just sitting around and you'd talk to friends and it was all about my pain, my angst, my issues. This is what we were taught to do. Talk about them. And it's not that talking about them is wrong, but what that does is it creates a habit in our mind. You've all heard of, we know about Pavlov's dogs. Very quick 30-second review. Scientist named Pavlov had a bunch of dogs. He would ring a bell and then give them food. Ring a bell, give them food. Ring a bell, give them food. Soon what he discovered was the ringing of the bell caused the dogs to salivate in their mouth. Saliva would come. They knew food is coming. Food is coming. They had associated the bell and food so many times that the bell itself made them start to have saliva in the mouth. He then stopped feeding them. Would just ring the bell, but no food. And they still would secrete the saliva. So this is a, it's a term that we use to talk about how, what happens to us in habits and patterns. So we literally become like that. Think about it. This becomes the way of being. So we are taught to hold on to our old files. We're taught to bring them to dinner with our friends. We're taught to think about them. We're taught to do all of this to make them active members of our lives. This is the stuff that we're, you know, our relationships are built on. For me, at least, coming from the West, it's so interesting in India because that same culture is not here nearly as much. Not nearly as much. It's much more a culture of just, okay, it's over. Okay, let's, get rid of, we move on. And in the very beginning, I remember thinking, oh, this is really simplistic. Like, don't they know the importance of processing? And what I realized very quickly is, oh, wait, they've got it so well. They really understand the dangers of overprocessing and how much we then identify with things. So the reason that we open up our old files so much, don't feel bad. You've been trained to do so. It's been deeply embedded in you to do so. And once you do it enough times, it happens automatically like the dog salivating even with no food. You no longer need to remind yourself or have someone say, oh, tell me about that. How do you feel about that? It just automatically happens. We become literally over-processors, over-analyzers. And it's a dilemma and a tragedy that so many of us have. The way out of it is to hold on to that model of God doesn't do it, which means in the scheme of things, it's not important. It's not self. Because the second part of that teaching of Pooja Swamiji's of God doesn't open your old files is just when you go to him, that's enough. Well, what that means is you are not your files. See how he's distinguished. He hasn't opened your files. You go to him. You are not your files. You are not that which you've done. You're not that which has happened to you. You're not any of that. We're the ones who spend our lives with these files open going, oh my God, yeah, when I was 10, this happened. When I was 15, that happened. When I was 20, this happened. And then we use that file, we literally, metaphorically walk down the street of our life holding the file in our face, wondering why we keep falling down. Saying, see, my file says I always fall. Well, no, you fell once when you were 10, but you've held that file in your face since then, so naturally, you can't see where you're going, and you keep falling. It's not your stars that make you fall. It's not that there's something wrong with you. It's that you're so busy staring at the file of what happened then that you make it happen now. And so we say, okay, God, here are my files. And we literally give them. You know everything. And you can give them to Ganga. You can give them to the Yajna fire. You can give them symbolically at your own mandir. Doesn't matter. But just offer them. Enough. I've been carrying these things around for so long. For so long, those of us who have moved residences a lot, you know, you've got boxes of things that you just kind of keep carrying with you from residence to residence that you haven't opened literally in like 30 years. But you think, oh, I can't get rid of that. That's my, you know, sixth grade graduation certificate. And we carry these boxes around, and they become really, really heavy. I'll tell you a quick personal story about that. When I went back to America after I'd been in India for the first few months, and Pooja Swamiji sent me back to finish the next semester of my PhD, I knew I wanted to come back to India quickly. So the apartment I had been renting was on a one-year lease. So I immediately moved out of there and moved into a place with a one-month lease so that I could just do it month to month and be done at the end of the semester. So I'm packing and moving, and I call Pooja Swamiji one night, and I'm complaining and moaning and groaning. And he said, "What's the problem?" And I said, "Oh my God, I've spent the whole day moving, and the moving vans and the guys and the boxes, and oh my God." And I just went on and on. And he said, "How far is your new apartment from your old apartment?" And I said, "Oh, it's only about half a mile or so." And he said, "Well, that's very close." He said, "You could walk that in just 10 minutes. He said, what's the problem?" And I said, "Oh, well, you know, the moving van and the guys and the boxes." And he said, "So the problem is your stuff." And I was forced to admit, yeah, the problem is my stuff. He said, "Because if you didn't have the stuff, you could just walk from your old place to your new place in 10 minutes and be done with it." And it's not just the stuff in boxes, literally our sixth grade graduation or a tea set. It's the baggage we carry inside that's even heavier. That stuff, all right, it can sit in garage after garage at different residences, whatever. If you've got the money to pay the U-Haul guys, pay it, they'll move it for you. But this baggage, nobody's going to carry it for us. We've got to carry it. Nobody's going to move it. Nobody's going to lift it. Nobody's going to pack it for us. There's no garage we can store it in. We're carrying it. Every minute of every day. And so to just literally say, "Okay, God, I'm enough. I want to be free." And the minute you actually make that decision, you're most of the way there. Because most of us actually hold on to it. And to simply be able to let it go, Ganga takes it. The Yajna Fire takes it. But you've got to let
it go. You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM-FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Alaya, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. Really, anything that happens in meditation is right. As long as you're meditating, it's right. But it's important to mention that just because this person has seen blue light and you may be seeing a different color light, or you may not see light. A few months ago, we had somebody asking about shapes that they saw in meditation. And what's most important for the group to remember is whatever happens in meditation is right. The only wrong way to do meditation or wrong thing to happen is not to do it, or to call it meditation, sit down, close your eyes, and allow yourself to make shopping lists or lists of everything that's wrong with the person you married or with your children or with your in-laws or with colleagues or employers or employees. That's the only thing that would make you say, this isn't working for me. But that's because it's not meditation. If you're really meditating, if you're really aiming, regardless of how long you manage to get between thoughts, regardless of the stillness, regardless of what you're able to attain, if you're actually meditating, it's right. There is no higher or lower. Most of us have been so acculturated and so indoctrinated in our education, in our careers, in our culture, to kind of put everything in a hierarchy. Even when we're in school, our extracurricular activities, there's always, you know, a hierarchy. I did karate, so you start with a white belt, and then you go up, and you can tell from far away who's higher based on the color of their belt. Oh, you're only a yellow belt, I'm a green belt. So there's this hierarchy in everything that we do. Where do you rank in school, in your class? What are your grades? What universities do you get into? What marks do you get there? What type of job do you get? What's your salary? All of these things. And so we're really used to this model of kind of getting better and better. If I, you know, keep doing my mathematics, if I keep doing arithmetic, eventually they're gonna, you know, take me into geometry. Or if I do addition really well, I'll learn how to do multiplication. If I nail seventh grade, I'm gonna move on to eighth grade. If I really nail it, maybe they'll skip me to ninth grade. And we bring this in, sadly, into our spiritual lives. If I just had the right guru or the right mantra or the right course or the right CD, then I'd get here. As though if you just could get the right math tutor, you'd end up with an 800 on your math SATs, and it's just about finding the right tutor or the right program. It's not how meditation works. Meditation is about connecting with the self. As we've emphasized the last few nights, have been variations on this theme. And although our self is one, the way we experience that self is different. So each of us has the same self, but because we're in different bodies, because we're in different vehicles, we're going to experience that self differently. So although you and I are meditating on the same self, there isn't, you know, Sadhviji self and Rekhaji self. It's just self. There's no my soul, your soul. It's just soul. But because of the vehicle, my way of experiencing soul is going to be different than your way of experiencing soul. Certain meditation techniques are going to work for me. Different ones are going to work for you. Not because we're going to different places, but just because our way of experiencing it is different. What runs this microphone? Electricity. What runs the lights? Come on, I gave you a clue. Electricity. What runs the camera? Same thing as running them all. The electricity running into this mic is the same as the electricity running into the light, same as the electricity running into the camera. But because the vehicle here is different than the vehicle there, is different than the fan vehicle, different than the camera vehicle, the experience of that electricity, the manifestation of that electricity is going to be different. Fan gives air, light gives light, mic gives sound. So when we go to meditate, we're meditating on self, not myself and yourself, but just self. But I'm still going into it with my very specific, very personal medium of consciousness, which is my brain, my mind. That's how we experience the self. It's how we meditate. If you were brain damaged, you had no brain activity at all, soul would still be there, of course. But your ability to connect with it, we don't know what it looks like. Nobody's come from that state and come back and told us what the experience of the soul is like in that moment. But what we know is that when the brain stops, or when the brain gets injured or damaged or even stimulated, its way of experiencing everything shifts. So soul is there. But if there's no activity in your brain, chances are you're not chanting your mantra. They're actually able to see that kind of stuff on brain scans. Is an auditory area of the brain lighting up? No. Now you may be connecting with the soul, but you're not going into it the same way that we are. So each of us is going to go into it separately. We're going to connect with it separately. In the same way, for example, a simpler way to think about this is go to a rock concert. Everybody's sitting in the same rock concert. Some people are right up against the speaker and they think, oh, this is so great, and they're dancing and they're singing. For somebody else, it's physically painful in the ear. I know sometimes when we have some musicians come during yoga festival and stuff, I love them, but I've got to carry smear plugs down to the god and stick them in because literally it hurts my ears. I love the people playing it, but it's physically painful to actually sit there and listen. Whereas for most everybody else, they're up against the speaker, dancing, loving it, no problem. The sound is the same. We're each connecting to exactly the same sound. It's not my speaker, your speaker. But the way that my ear senses it, the way my brain perceives it, is different from the way somebody else's ear senses it and brain perceives it. In the same way, when we go to connect with the self is one. But we're going into it with the mind, remember? It's my mind that says, chant my mantra, focus on my breath. It's the mind that is aware that I've trailed off on a thought that reminds me to bring it back. The mind is not always the enemy. In times like that, the mind is the friend. It says, ah, you've gone off. Bring it back. So we have different ways of experiencing the self. And I give this background because when we start talking about blue light, it's wonderful. Don't worry about it. it's a good sign. But the truth is, I'd say that if you said, I see purple light. I'd say that if you said, I see yellow light. I'd say that if you said, I see no light. The simple fact that you are experiencing meditation, that something other than shopping lists and thoughts and regrets and fears and desires are coming up, that you're actually in a state of meditation enough that anything happens, whether it's light, whether it's shapes, whether it's simply stillness. Because that also happens. Anything that happens in meditation is right, because it means you're meditating. The fact that it keeps happening even when you take breaks from meditation is what we call grace. It's the universe not giving up on you. Because all of the rest of things in life are not quite like that. You can't take 2 month breaks at a time from seventh grade and still expect that they're going to pass you into eighth grade next year. You can't take months of breaks from your job and expect you're going to get the next promotion. This is grace. This is the universe saying, it's okay. As Pooja Swamiji always says, God doesn't open our old files. So this is the universe having love and compassion and grace and saying, it's okay, honey. I'm still here. You haven't come and connected for 2 months. I've missed you. You've been away, but no problem. Here I am. And what I would say is don't let 2 months go by again. So it's the universe giving you a gift, the gift of grace. And when you get a gift like that from the universe, it's a message that says meditate more.
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times. Co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. The purpose of human beings, the reason that we're here, and I say this because this is what all of the scriptures tell us. This is not the world according to me. This is what the scriptures say. It's what the saints say. It's what the sages say, what all of the leaders say. The reason we are here in a human body is to attain the experience of our own divinity. Self-realization, self-awareness, to know who we are. That's why we're here. And that's why we've been given the human body. Because with this mind, with this brain, we actually have the power and the ability to have that consciousness. The animal kingdom, certainly the plant kingdom, seem to act a lot better than we do. On the level of how we act, we certainly cannot say humans are the pinnacle of evolution. If you look at animals, they harm another only for two reasons. Either because they need it to eat, so the bigger animals kill the littler animals because they're carnivores, it's what they need to eat, or because they are immediately threatened. Come upon a mother bear with her cubs. If she thinks you're a threat to her cubs, she will attack. Those are the only two reasons. We are the only species that neither for food nor for physical protection of myself or my children do I harm another. So we are not at the highest of evolution in that way for sure. But what we have is the ability to witness ourselves, which none of the other species has. And that is a crucial component of attaining enlightenment. If I'm not able to step out of my identification with this body, with this personality, I'm not going to get enlightened. I've got to be able to connect with the one who's watching me do this, who's watching the drama. The one who says, oh yeah, now there's anger coming. But if I only identify as I'm angry, I'll never get there. So as humans, we have the ability to step out of the actor and to be the one watching the drama and even able to control and direct the drama to some extent. So our purpose is to utilize that ability in order to experience the divinity within ourselves, which comes only through spiritual practice, through meditation, through prayer, through grace, through something that gives us the experience of not being the body, but of being consciousness, of being spirit, of being love, of being one with all. And that's why we're here. That's why we get a human birth, is to have that awareness. And when you get it, that's when they say moksha, liberation. You don't have to come back again. But Pooja Swamiji always says, you don't have to die to have moksha, you can have it right here. As soon as we have that awareness. But then the second part of your question, well, what are we supposed to do? Okay, so I'm supposed to have this awareness, but then what to do? Well, once we know who we are, then what we do comes very naturally. Our problem is we don't know who we are, so we don't know what to do. We look around, we look at the people around us, our friend circle, we look at the people we see on TV, now we look at the people we see on Facebook. And we judge ourselves accordingly. Oh, I want to do what this one's doing. Oh, I want to do what this one's doing. Oh, that looks really good. Or, oh, my brother did this, my neighbor did that. We judge it based on what other people do. Oh, I should also do this. Oh, yeah, I'm also that. Because we have no idea who we are. So we kind of flap around from thing to thing to thing because we don't know who we are. The minute we know who we are, living comes very naturally. You know, you never see a bird standing on the top of a building. Should I, shouldn't I, right? But take a dog or a cat up there and try to get it to jump. Not going to be so easy. They understand. I'm not a bird. Even they watch the bird jump, they're still not going to jump. Intuitively, they know, oh, that's neat, but it's not me. We don't even know that. So through our meditation, through our spiritual practice, through purification, this is what all of sadhana is. When we talk about purification of the self, it's not purification of the capital S true self. It's purification of the self that I identify as, so that it will allow me to see the truth. It's the cleaning the dirt off my window so I can see the light that's already shining. And then, of course, what you find is it's not about what you do. It's about who you are and how you do it. And everything in life becomes an opportunity to fulfill your dharma. Most of us, it's like, okay, I'm just waiting and biding my time until I figure out what my dharma is and I can fulfill it. Or until I, you know, am able to do this thing that I know is what I'm supposed to do. But all of the scriptures, all of the teachings are full of the exact opposite. That it's about every minute and every moment of how we live. It's not about that amazing thing. It's not about that high thing. It's not about this remarkable, unprecedented, extraordinary thing. It's about every minute and every moment, the integrity, the sincerity, the connection. I'll conclude with this, but I was just in Calcutta last week for an event. And on the morning we were leaving, we found that we had some extra time when we were going to the airport. And so we went to the Dakshineshwar Temple near the airport in Calcutta, which is where, you know, it's the great Devi Mahakali Temple. But it's the temple where Paramahansa Ramakrishnaji lived. And the priest in the temple, when we were there, was saying to us, you know, it's amazing. He was just like one of us. He was a priest in the temple. He said he was just like one of us, doing what we're doing. But in doing it, he was so in love with the mother, with the goddess, that the rest of the magic happened. And it's magic that now, you know, 100 years later is still drawing people. And you feel it there. You feel it. I mean, the magic is still there. And that's what it's about. I'm sure most of the people serving as priests and, you know, everybody's looking to do something different. You go to America, sadly, most of the priests in the temples have side jobs as well on their days, you know, making extra money, wanting to do something else. How can I get a better job? Chelo, being a priest was what brought me from India to America, but now that I'm here, how can I get a higher paying something? Thinking I'm not, you know, this isn't my full potential, it's not my dharma, I should be something else. It's not about that. It's about who you are in doing what you're doing, in being the simple priest of the temple. He was so there and so present and so connected that in feeding her, she ate from his hands. And that's where the magic happens. It's not about first you become, you know, the chairman of the board of the, you know, this association, and then the magic will happen. Your dharma is right here in every minute and every moment. How can you, in whatever you're doing, live as and manifest that divinity so that it all becomes sacred and it all becomes a means to your own unfolding, to your own awakening? And that's what it's about.
This is OTR FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
When I broke my foot.
For leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom, for taking you to your therapies, for understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. That's why AARP gives you the information to provide even better care for your loved one. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati, and thanks for coming back and joining us for more of inspiration and transformation. The true self, and how do we realize it in our lives? The true self is something that when you go to the scriptures, which of course is the highest source. When you go to the scriptures and you say, okay, I want to learn about the self. What is the self? What we're given actually are a lot of descriptions that kind of go around it, and they're honest about it. They say what we're doing here is going around the truth. And what they give us instead of a the self is blah, 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 instead of that, what they say is all these words we are speaking will give you an idea, will give you an aspect, will give you a reflection. But in order to really know the self, here's what you have to do. You meditate. And they even give you some different practices. I mean, all meditation, of course, takes us to the self. But they give you certain practices specifically for that. And what we realize is the reason that they give us these practices is that we connect with what the self is through realizing what the self is not. So if I say to you, what does a naked body look like? Well, you could use words. You could verbally try to describe it to me. And you would talk around what a naked body looks like. You'd talk about some tone of flesh. You'd talk about some hair. You'd talk about some openings. But it's talking around. Really what you'd say is, well, take off your clothes and look in a mirror. If you want to know what a naked body looks like, the fastest way to do it, rather than me talking you around it, is to say, here's a mirror. Now take off your clothes, all of them. And you're going to have the answer immediately. So this is what the practice of meditation that they give is for. And one of the beautiful practices that's given for this is a practice called Niti Niti, which is a practice that begins with the obvious. And it says, well, I'm not this sorry. We all get that. I change my clothes every day. Sometimes even twice in a day. I'm not changing myself with my clothes. And you go layer by layer deeper. I'm not the skin. I'm not the flesh beneath the skin. I'm not the blood that runs through my veins and arteries. I'm not the organs of the body. So we go through the physical being, and then we move into the more subtle aspects. I'm not my thoughts. And the reason that you know you're not your thoughts is you would cease to exist the minute you had a moment of stillness. And if you ceased to exist, there would be no one to think your next thought. So the sheer fact that we have thoughts one after the other means we're not our thoughts. I'm not my emotions, because the emotions are chemical and electrical patterns of activity in my brain. Because neurologists can actually stick a metal probe into my brain and make me feel emotions. If you ever want to have a really humbling experience, if you ever feel like you really are your anger, have a neurologist, I mean, they obviously don't do it just on demand because you've got to remove the skull to do it, but the brain doesn't actually have any pain sensors. So when people, for whatever reason, have had to have pieces of the skull removed, they're actually able to go in while the person is still conscious, awake, and probe different areas of the brain. And what we know is you can stick a probe in the brain and make someone angry. You can stick a probe somewhere else in the brain and make them laugh uncontrollably. Stick a probe somewhere else in the brain and make them sexually aroused. Stick a probe somewhere else and make them cry. So we know it's in the brain. And the other reason we know that is when I do things that alter my brain, nothing to do with spirituality, nothing to do with psychology, I take a pill, I drink alcohol, I smoke something, my emotions change. I haven't meditated. I haven't had therapy. I haven't done yoga. All I've done is had something that changed my brain. And look how my emotions change. So the emotions also, I'm not my emotions. And we go through it piece by piece until you actually get to the point where there's nothing left to say, I'm not this. And that's when you have that experience in the what's left in this moment. If I'm not even my thoughts, if I'm not my emotions, and you're able to keep peeling them back layer by layer by layer, then you're left with just is. And that is a taste of the self. And this is how we know. And then, of course, we try to hold on to it. So we keep meditating to give us more and more of an experience of sitting in that place, knowing what that experience is. But then we also try to take it into our lives. Because for most of us, we can't spend 24 hours a day, or even just all our waking hours, sitting on the floor with our legs crossed and our eyes closed. We've got duties in the world. We have things to fulfill. But how do we hold on to that awareness of the self? And this is one of the greatest challenges, goals, because ultimately that's what we're put on earth for. Whatever scripture you read, none of them says you are here to become a CEO. You are here to become a president. You are here to become Miss Universe. You are here to become a billionaire. You are here to be so-and-so's wife or husband. What they all tell us, you are here to recognize the self. But not just for a moment. You're here to recognize that in a way that it's an experience that's so true you hold on to it. And we start to move through the world. And of course, moving through the world becomes very much like our meditation, meaning I have it, I'm interacting with you as self to self, as spirit to spirit. And then I lose it. Somebody cuts me off in traffic or something happens, whatever it is. Something little, something big, I lose it. I'm back with me as separate from you. I'm angry, I'm jealous, I'm frustrated. I feel greedy, I feel lustful, whatever it is, I've just turned you again into an object in front of my eyes. And just like in meditation, when we lose it, what do? We just bring it back. We don't berate ourselves. We don't overanalyze ourselves. Sure, if you find that you keep losing it in the same situation, you analyze it. But otherwise, you just keep bringing it back. Otherwise, what ends up happening is everything in life becomes about these different people or these different situations that steal my peace. I'm living in an experience of the self. If you could just stop annoying me. Like if you could just stop doing that, I am so meditative. And today it's you in this situation. Tomorrow it's you in a different situation. The day after it's him in a third situation. And that's how most of us live. Well, I was in peace, or I would be in peace. I would be able to live this, except my mother-in-law. My employer, my employee, my next door neighbor, my colleague, my gas station attendant. He's so slow. I'm always late for work. I was so peaceful when I left the house. Then this guy made me late. You see how quickly we lose it. And so the key is really, just like we do in meditation, a thought comes, we just bring the mind back, whether it's back to the breath, back to a mantra, back to whatever we're meditating on, back to the neti neti, back to who am I. It's another good meditation, just who am I? Who am I? Who am I? This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week, and I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.